Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Creative Differences Podcast, the podcast where today we get to talk about robots and dinosaurs. It is my childhood dream. My name is Dallas, and speaking of robots, I will gladly watch a new Megan movie every few years as long as Jenna Davis wants to do them.
I'm Cassie, and you know what? It's the 5th of July, and I gotta say, I'm tired of living in a country that's run by people who hate most of the people who live here.
Same. That's the mood.
I'm Demi, and we're also here to talk about Immortal Soldiers, and I'm about that life.
And also Welcome chefs. To another... I feel like we're ignoring the chefs.
They're normal people.
Also chefs. They are normal people.
Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, we are going to be talking about Jurassic World Rebirth, Megan, The Old Guard 2, and The Bear. Probably in that order.
Yep. We got lots of stuff.
We're also going to try and do it as fast as possible because I currently have a job, which does not give me enough time to edit these.
Yes. Also, speaking of Demi's job, we're changing our format a little bit. Normally, we're like, let's do reviews, and then we're going to talk about some news and some trailers, and Cassie watched 10 minutes of a thing. We're not talking about news and trailers for the time being. We'll see how that works out.
Heck, maybe you guys will catch us when you catch us.
Let us know in the comments. Yeah, you know, consistency. We haven't done that in a while, so don't even worry about that.
It's even less consistent.
In terms of news, and trailer tracking. Bye. All right.
Oh, well, before we get started, please like, share, and subscribe, even though we are currently hitting a bump in consistency.
Yeah, pretend we're not doing that and give us more support.
We're trying our best here.
Yeah, we got...
But, you know, we have jobs.
Got stuff to do.
All right, guys, we're going to hit it, kick things off with Jurassic World Rebirth.
Jurassic World Rebirth. It is... directed by Gareth Edwards,
Woo!
Who made Godzilla, he made Rogue One, a Star Wars story, and he made The Creator. The movie is written by David Koepp. He's written so many things. It's honestly ridiculous. He wrote Jurassic Park, Mission Impossible, Spider-Man, the last two Indiana Jones movies, Death Becomes Her. The list is very long. Dude has 4 movies that he wrote coming out this year. Oh, Alexander Hamilton face-ass nigga.
That's anyway. Wild.
When I was looking at his filmography, I was just like, you won't stop writing. He writes books too. One of his movies this year is based on a book he wrote.
I love that for him.
Yeah, right? Like he running out of time. All right, the movie stars Scarlett Johansson, Mahershala Ali, Jonathan Bailey, Rupert Friend, Manuel Garcia Rufo. And Ed Skrein, he's in it for a little bit. He was listed on the Wikipedia, so I added him, but he's not in a whole lot of the movie.
Yeah, I was not aware that he was going to be in this movie when I was watching it, and he Same. Popped up, and I was like, Ed Skrein there? What?
Taylor was like, is that Ajax?
I was and so was. Excited.
Yeah. Shout out to him.
All right.
A little bit.
Yeah.
IMDb summary says, 5 years post-Jurassic World Dominion, 2022, an expedition braves isolated equatorial regions to extract DNA from 3 massive prehistoric creatures for a groundbreaking medical breakthrough. And also, to that note, I just want to say, last night I was watching the kill count for Dominion, and there's a line that's almost verbatim, extracting DNA from for a groundbreaking medical breakthrough.
That's what we do out here.
And I was like, that's Rebirth. But yeah, initial thoughts. Cassie, you didn't watch it, right? I knew that. Then me. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. I saw the movie actually a week ahead of time, and I was hoping to get to review it before the movie came out. But job. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I felt like this felt closer to a return to the original Jurassic Park movie, which is kind of what I was anticipating when I first saw the trailers. It's not quite Jurassic Park, but I enjoy it far more than I enjoyed the other Jurassic World movies. I had a great time. Really liked the movie.
Love that for you. Also the way I started this intro with like robots and dinosaurs was because when we were planning to do this last week, it was robots, dinosaurs, and race cars when I was going to do F1, and I was like, that's like the perfect little kid dream. But then we added chefs and immortal warriors and it got a little muddy. On to this movie, I want to say, important clarification. When I say something is mid, that does not mean it's bad. The word mid is
it means it's average.
People are like, exactly. People hear mid and they think like, oh, you said it's trash or it sucks. No, it's in the middle. This movie is very in the middle for me. I did not ever feel like I'm gonna walk out of here. I did not ever feel like this is really good. I was just like, all right, dinosaurs, some people, T-Rex, you know, a little sleepy boy. Love that. An adorable dinosaur named Dolores, who we might get to later. But yeah, good acting. Meh. Story and writing for me. But, you know, I came for dinosaurs and there are dinosaurs. What more could I want?
Yeah, for me, I'm like, I know what I'm coming into a Jurassic Park movie for, right? And for me, I just want you to tell me I think the story is very simple, but it's a solid story. It's a story that you can easily follow. It all makes sense. I think everybody's character arc is cohesive and very well done. I like these actors a lot. I thought that everybody did like a really good job. I'm very happy that Gareth Edwards brought some visual character back into these movies. Because I feel like the other Jurassic World movies feel so sleek. I felt like Gareth Edwards brought, and the cinematographer whose name I do not know, but they brought like some visual character to the movie. Like, I'm like, ooh, look at the lighting there. Oh man, that's a cool shot over there. Oh man, that looks really good. Like, and okay, it doesn't look like every other movie that's out right now. Like, it looks like a Jurassic Park movie.
You wanted to know the cinematographer's name is John Matheson.
Thank you.
Look at you, Cassie. I was looking that up too. You found it right when I did.
He did Gladiator.
Ooh, see? See?
Oh, okay.
Gladiator's a good looking movie.
Oh, he did Batgirl.
Ugh. Rest in peace to Batgirl.
Also, Phantom of the Opera. Man. Rain.
Oh,
anyway,
I love that movie.
Keep going.
See? Just a good looking. I think this is just a movie that's like super well executed. This is a movie you can walk into, you can turn your brain off, but it's done well. And whether you enjoy it or not, you know, that's going to vary across the board. But I do think that they returned a little bit more to Jurassic Park in like this feeling of we're in like a wilderness type environment and we're trying to like escape from like primal beasts. And I feel like Jurassic World was so sleek that it kind of lost that feeling. Like we were always in a lab. Or we were in a mansion for one whole movie. Like.
Yeah, that was a weird choice.
Yeah, like this movie, it's like, no, we've returned to like being in a wilderness type place where these big primal beasts can like kill us at any moment. And like, I felt that and I liked that in this movie.
I get that. It was definitely like visually, I'm never disappointed by any of these movies visually, like regardless of.
Yeah, I think they all look good.
I'm like, dinosaurs, they look cool. The setting usually looks cool. Even that spooky house, it looked cool for a spooky house. But it was like, I don't know. It's just, I'm watching it and it's like, I want to be attached to these characters because I want to care if they die. And I feel like I like Scarlett Johansson and I like Mahershala Ali, so I don't want them to die because I'm like, hey, I like you. I like your actor. And then they introduce this family and like the way they introduce I call him daughter's boyfriend because that's what he is. His first scene felt like I was watching 1,000 Ways to Die. I don't know if you guys ever saw that show, but they would tell stories of how people died in stupid ways.
I saw bits and pieces of that show.
Yeah, because they wanted you to not feel bad. They would have to make them out to just be terrible.
No.
And they'd like be selfish and lazy. And
I legitimately was waiting for his death scene. I was waiting for a dinosaur to chomp him up.
That first introduction, I'm like, who? What is this character?
I was like, oh, he's gone. First 15 minutes, he's out. Like,
Kayla leaned over. She was like, so they want us to want him to die. And I was like, clearly, he's going to get eaten. But fortunately, they do more with him over the course of the movie.
He's got a good character arc. Like,
why did you? Y'all went really hard to make us hate this boy.
Character-wise, this is probably my favorite Jonathan Bailey character that I've seen, which is hilarious because I love Fierro. But I love Jonathan Bailey in this movie. And I actually think that the characters in this movie are the reason why I'd be okay with them making more Jurassic World movies. Like, I wasn't particularly, like, excited for more Jurassic World movies when they announced that this was happening. I was like, Scarlett Johansson's in it. I'm going to watch it because Scarlett Johansson is in it.
Right.
But for me, I'm like, now that I've seen the movie, I'm like, oh, I would watch more of these because I would like to see more of these characters. I like Mahershala Ali's character. Scarlett Johansson is doing her action Scarlett Johansson role, which is not a bad thing for me because that's one of my favorite types of Scarlett Johansson roles. I like when Scarlett Johansson is an action girl. But I also really liked that, like, if they continue this on, I feel like her and Jonathan Bailey's Zora and Henry have the potential to be this generation's Rick and Evie from The Mummy. Like, they gave those vibes. Like, she would be the Rick and he would be the Evie. Like, they had that energy. And I don't think the movie really, like, tapped into that because for some reason we're in an age where we don't really do a lot of romance in movies anymore. But I feel like they could if they kept these movies going. And that would, like, really engage me and keep me watching these movies if they decided to go that route. I enjoyed the movie. I had a lot of fun.
Cool. I am very glad that you had a lot of fun. I did not, but dinosaurs. You love dinosaurs. Why not?
I don't really love dinosaurs. That's actually not a thing for me.
I think we was like the general audience.
The general audience.
All these movies make $1 billion.
Yeah.
We love dinosaurs.
They typically have a thing for dinosaurs. I never come to these movies for the dinosaurs. I have to be honest.
That's wild to me.
I never do. And to be fair, I've only seen the original Jurassic Park and the other Jurassic World movies.
Well, that means you haven't seen the fucking Alan scene?
No.
Oh, no. It's so good.
That is the peak of the franchise.
I have no interest.
That's fair. You don't really need to.
Yeah, but shout out to AMC for the early screening. I had a really good time going to an early screening and watching it with a bunch of people who were excited to watch the movie.
Those people like dinosaurs, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Probably.
All right.
Megan,
from dinosaurs to robots.
Let's talk about some AI.
Let's talk about some AI. Megan 2.0. It is written and directed by Gerard Johnstone, who directed Megan and a movie called Housebound. I don't know what that is. It stars Amy Donald, Jenna Davis, Allison Williams, Violet McGraw, Ivana Sakhno, and Jemaine Clement. Much to my surprise, Tomato is here. IMDb summary is, 2 years after Megan's rampage, her creator, Gemma, resorts to resurrecting her infamous creation in order to take down Amelia, the military-grade weapon who was built by a defense contractor who stole Megan's underlying tech. And the Dallas summary is, hey, have you seen Terminator 2? It's like that, but for the girlies. So yeah, it's a... Oh yeah, sorry. Initial thoughts. I love it. I will continue to love it. I love the first Megan. I love the second Megan. Keep giving me Megans. Thank you, Universal.
I had a great time watching this movie. I've never seen the first Megan. Megan 2.0 because I was like, oh, they're going Terminator 2 with it. I like that. I want to go see this now. Cause I've always known about Megan cause you guys like Megan. But for this one, once Ivana Sakhno got attached to the project, I was like, I'm tempted, but I don't know if I want to do horror. And once the trailer came out, I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. I had a great time.
Question. Is there much horror in this movie?
No.
No. Oh. This is not a horror movie. This is an action movie. All right. Yeah. Complete genre. Genre swap.
Yeah. But I had a great time. I thought this movie, like, they knew what they wanted to do from the get-go, and the movie does everything that it wants to do. So I just had a fun time in the theater watching this very insane movie about robots and AI. And please stop teaching the AIs, guys. God, just stop. There's still time.
Well, I suppose Megan's issue was not so much the AI. It was that when she got attacked by a dog in the first one, that like messed with her programming, was my assumption. And that made her want to kill people.
No, that girl's program. She just like it.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way, but we can have another discussion about the first one at some point. Sure. Which I do really want to do because I love these movies so much. But this one, they went T2, no more horror. Megan is the T-800 and Amelia is the T-1000. I love horror movies, but the first one wasn't really scary anyway. And Megan was the aspect that really made me love it. So like, I'm fine. I know a lot of people who are horror fans are like, no, give us the horror. And I get that. But I'm like, I'll watch a Megan horror movie. I'll watch a Megan action movie. I'll watch a Megan Western. I'll watch a Megan rom-com. That would be super weird. Maybe not that. But whatever genre this takes, because Jenna Davis is killing it with her vocal performance. Amy Donald as well, who does the physical performance. She gets another dance scene. We love it. She gets action scenes. We love it. But Jenna Davis's voice work, it's what makes the movie so fun for me. Like, the snark, the voice, we'll get, it's a robots fighting movie, so we get a lot of exposition and techno babble where they're explaining, like, oh, the hard drive and the motherboard and the SIM card and the phone minutes. And it feels like we could, like, before that gets too boring, Megan will say something snarky, like, oh, I'm sorry. Would you like a printout so you can read at your own pace? And I'm like, yes. Thank you, Megan. I needed that.
I'm also a huge fan of Allison Williams, and I have been since Get Out.
I personally
think she should have gotten an Oscar nomination for Get Out. I think she's a phenomenal actress, and it's really fun watching her in this movie. And I thought it was really cool that she, not to spoil too much, but she does get her own little action sequence. And I was like, man, how cool is that for you to come back to this movie and just get to, like, show out? Like, that's so much fun, and that's so cool.
They kind of all do.
Yeah.
Like, Allison does, Violet McGraw does, obviously Megan does, but it's like, you go from, it honestly is Terminator. Like, Sarah Connor in the first Terminator is a horror movie, but a final girl basically. And then she becomes an action movie star in the second one. And it's like, now Violet McGraw does Aikido and Gemma fights in the, not to give too much away, like you said, but, I would say they all continue to impress me. I think Violet emotionally had more to do in the first one. But, like, now she gets to be...
She's an angsty teenager in this one.
An angsty teenager who does Aikido. And it's like, can't hate on that. Can't hate on that at all.
I liked the way that this movie tackled, like, the insecurity of parenthood. Like, doing your best to be a good parent, but never being too sure if you're doing the right thing. And I think that's, like... I don't have kids. None of us have kids. We have friends who have kids. One of our hosts has kids on this show.
True.
But I think that just from observing parenthood, you know, it changes depending on whatever child you're raising. Each child is different, so therefore whatever parenting method you're using are going to change with each child. So I think this is a fun and interesting movie to kind of tackle that with. Also, like I said, I came in for Ivana Sakno. I was not disappointed. That girl was so good at acting like a robot. Also, I think...
it's uncanny.
Yeah, definitely. I think her lightsaber fight training for Ahsoka definitely came in handy for this movie. I also... Back to Gemma. That's Allison Williams' character. If you guys make a Megan 3.0... Can you guys
do it?
But also, can you guys please the queer hints that you were giving about Gemma's character, expound upon? What are we saying here? What's going on? what do you mean he's not her type?
Is there anything in Megan 2.0 that is as, like, visceral as the ear in Megan 1? Because that because I also watched the unrated version when I watched it, so
I've heard things about that. I would say surface level, yes, but it doesn't really hit like that thing does. But a couple things I want to say before we wrap this up. I thought you were gonna bring up the titanium scene. And there is something like that.
Oh, no.
And it's delightful. It's my favorite thing. And I will not spoil the song, but it's the best. Black people, you're going to love it. Also.
Is that cultural appropriation?
No.
Not technically, but I'll get into that afterward. Gemma's queer thing. I'll get into that afterward too, because I have questions for Demi.
You would not be the first person.
I was going to bring up Ivana, is that her name? Ivana Sakno?
Yes.
She actually got cast because of Ahsoka. I was watching interview with Gerard Johnstone, and he talked about watching Ahsoka with his kids. I think it's kids, and seeing her, and she was like, oh, Amelia's got to be like that.
No,
and
she's so brilliant.
They did the, what's it? When they were like, we want someone like Zoe Kravitz to be in the Batman, and then they just got her. They're like, we want someone like that. And then they're like, wait,
let's just get like her. Yeah. No, she legitimately is so brilliant on Ahsoka. Like, I remember watching that trailer for the first time and being like, oh my gosh, this girl is about to like destroy. And that was just off her lightsaber skills on the trailer. Right. But like, yeah, when you watch the show, like, she's such an intriguing character, and she's so good at playing Shin Hati, who is one of my favorite Darksiders.
Nice.
But yeah, that's great. I love that she got cast because of Ahsoka. Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah. And speaking of, I forgot to tell you guys why Gabby's not here. Speaking of people on the podcast who have kids, Gabby's not here because she is researching how to build a learning robot that looks like Florence Pugh. So she's busy. That's a time intensive endeavor.
All right. Speaking of action movies, The Old Guard 2, which is directed by Victoria Mahoney, who is, I believe, the first Black director to have ever directed anything for the Star Wars franchise. She was the second unit director for The Rise of Skywalker. The movie was written by Greg Rucka and Sarah L. Walker, and it stars Charlize Theron, Kiki Lane, Matthias Schoenaert, Marwan Kenzari, Luca Marinelli, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Veronica Gon, Henry Golding, and Uma Thurman. And the IMDb synopsis is, Andy leads immortal warriors against a powerful enemy threatening their group. They grapple with the resurfacing of a long-lost immortal, complicating their mission to safeguard humanity. Yep, that's the synopsis. All right. Initial thoughts. This is an extremely flawed movie that I also happen to love. Like,
cool.
You could absolutely tell me all your criticisms of this movie, and I would probably be like, you're not wrong. Although there are a couple that I have seen that I've been like, what? You weren't emotionally distraught watching this scene? You weren't in despair like I was? Outside of those criticisms, though, like, yeah, like, this is not a complete movie, which upsets me. Because I got to the end of the movie and I was like, wait, that's it? Are we getting a third one? Because they left us on a huge cliffhanger. And this was one of those things where, like, I got to the end and the end kind of soured my opinion of the film. However, I still had a great time while I was watching it, though. Like, the action sequences are so, so good. I love the action sequences in both of these movies. Charlize and Veronica. The amount of chemistry on screen. I was choking on that chemistry. You've got to be kidding me right now. Like, they would get on screen and I was like, dear God, the tragic lesbian ex-lover story that is happening right now is a lot. Every time they are on screen, like, the movie is a 5-star movie. Like,
yo, I just want to mention, on Wikipedia it lists one of Andy's closest friends. Don't do that. Don't gals.
That's not what they are. That's not. They are roommates. Not roommates. They were. Yes. They were roommates, guys. Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. And I think the movie would have been better off, like, if you're gonna do a Across the Spider-Verse, Beyond the Spider-Verse sort of thing, I think the movie would have been better off if, like, the A story of this movie is them discovering, like, the big bad, which is Uma Thurman's character, and that comes with a lot of, like, lore dump and exposition and stuff like that. And setting up for whatever's going to happen in the third movie. And then the B story is Andy, played by Charlize, and Quinn, played by Veronica. And, like, Quinn coming back and, like, their reunion and, like, all of Quinn's anger that comes with that reunion. I feel like that should have been the A story. That should have been the movie. The movie should have been Andy and Quinn dealing with their drama and the team having to help Andy work through that. And them trying to stop Quinn from having her revenge against them for what Andy did. And then we can have the plot twist at the end that sets us up for movie 3 and we still have our cliffhanger. And I'm not just saying that because I like me a messed up ex-lover situation. But I think legitimately that would have made the movie better and emotionally more resonant with people. But again, I love this movie. I love the action scenes. There's one sequence in particular that I super love, which is when Andy is going to see Quinn for the first time in 500 years. We watch Andy go, she walks through an alley, and it starts off in present day. And as we're watching her walk through the alley, the scenery around her changes, and we see the different periods of time that her entire team is from.
That's cool.
And it's so cool. Like, I was watching the shot and I was like, why is he dressed like he's from the, wait, whoa, that's insane. And then when we get to the end of the alley, it's her finally face to face with Quinn. And when we see Quinn for the first time, she's like dressed from the era that she met Andy in. Right. And then we circle around and Quinn shifts into who she is like presently as we're facing Andy. It's just, it's such a good shot. It's so good. Like, there's so many great things in this movie, but there's also like some really flawed stuff in this movie, but I still had a great time. I also think focusing on Andy and Quinn's story, which again, best part of the movie, would have given more conflict for Andy and Niall. And Niall is kind of like Andy's daughter figure, I guess you could say, in the movie. Right. And I think it would have really like sparked conflict between the two of them, because Niall would want to protect Andy and be like, hey, you're not, and she does this in the movie, she's like, you're not thinking straight, and you don't think straight whenever this woman is involved. I don't think it's a good idea for you to be doing the things that you're doing. And I think that would have, I think it would have brought the team, because
she's gay.
Not that the movie will say it.
Okay, so I have the question. Like, I was gonna ask you, is the ex-lover thing, because I don't remember the first movie very well, is the ex-lover thing stated, or is it like subtext that you're reading into?
It's very much subtext that I think everybody who has watched the movie has kind of read into.
Okay.
And like, if you watch the second movie, it feels a lot more obvious. Like, oh, you guys wrote them to be a couple, but we're not allowed to say it.
Because when Cassie said that Wikipedia refers to her as one of her closest friends, I was like, but wait, Wikipedia, I think, wouldn't actually do that if the movie said that's not what they were. So I just wanted to be clear, because I have not seen the movie.
The movies have not said that, but it's very clear in the way that Charlize and Veronica are playing these two characters that they're like, nope, that's what's happening here. That's what this is. Okay. And it's ridiculous. But thank them both. I thank them both for their work. They put in effort. But yeah, I love the cast. I love these cast of characters, and I'm glad to see them back. I will watch 100 of these suckers if you give them to me. In the same way that Dallas is like, give me Megan 3, 4, 5, 6, all of them. Give me Old Guard 3, 4, 5, 6, all of them. I want as many movies as these writers and this cast of characters and the cast themselves are willing to give me, because I think they're great characters. And I think they're great characters in this movie. I just wish that they had gotten a story that felt more complete and not like, hey guys, we're setting up for another movie that we don't know if we're greenlit for.
Yeah.
But I had a great time watching it the entire way through. Like, good. I had fun.
Love that.
Fight scenes are great. Cast is great. The homoerotic tension, fantastic. All right, guys, let's start talking about The Bear.
The Bear is created by Christopher Storer. It stars Jeremy Allen White, Eben Moss Bachrach, Io Debary, Lionel Boyce, Liza Colon-Zayas, Abby Elliott, Maddie Matheson, Oliver Platt, bunch of other people. Speaking of casts that we love, everybody's great. IMDb summary, it hasn't been updated since season one. So the Dallas summary is, Carmy's at it again.
As always.
But I will say, my Instagram algorithm has been flooded with clips from The Bear because I'm just watching them now. And we had a conversation in our group chat about Carmy's growth. And watching those clips from the earlier seasons, I'm going to be a Carmy apologist. I don't think we've given him enough credit from where he came, because he was going crazy in that kitchen. Like, he's not well-adjusted or, like, super good at this stuff now. But the stuff he was doing in that kitchen, I'm like, nah, bro, you should have had hands put on you every episode in season one.
He still needs to have hands put on him every episode. But I do feel like he has grown a lot since the first season. It just feels like it's been very slow going in comparison to, like, other characters.
Right.
You know. Like, the other characters feel like they've, like, progressed so far in comparison to Carmi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially, oh, yeah, most of them. But Tina, my girl.
Richie is, like, a prime example of how far a character can, like, change in the span of just an episode.
It was so fast. It was like, oh, he went there, came back. He's
but
a new man.
But it felt so earned.
Yeah, we stuck with that. Like, that episode really showed that growth. Came back wearing suits.
Yeah.
Different person.
Yeah, I enjoyed this season a lot. I don't know if I was a big fan of the countdown clock outside of visually, because I didn't actually feel it in the show.
Interesting. I'm gonna circle back to that after I get Cassie's initial thoughts. Cassie, what'd you think of the season?
I thought it was pretty solid. I thought, like, I was thinking about, I don't remember, like, anything from season 3 except for the sugar giving birth episode and how it ended. This season, I feel like, is more, I don't know, I don't want to say more memorable, but it stuck with me more. It was more interesting. I was more invested. I feel like Carmi needs hands. But everyone around him is just wonderful. And, like, I don't know. We also had a conversation where I personally think that this is a good place to end the series, but they're getting one more season, so we'll see where things go. I don't know. I liked it, but the way that it ended also left me feeling like I'm not sure I'm very interested to see this continue. So it was conflicting.
Fair. Back to Demi's point about the clock. You said you felt like you didn't really feel like the urgency of it.
No, I don't feel like I did. And I think it's because of the arcs that everyone was given. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like those arcs were in time with, like, the clock. Mm. Like, we're still working on Sid signing the contract. And it's like, what does that matter, man, if they're going to close the restaurant by the time the clock runs out, right? Like she should be signing that sooner, or we should be dealing with that sooner. Or, like, Tina's storyline was her trying to cut down the time on making this pasta.
Man, that pasta.
And it's like, okay, but even if she gets that done by the time this clock is done, again, it doesn't matter.
Get shut,
like,
down,
it felt,
what you gonna do, make the pasta at home? Tina?
Yeah, so it felt like they gave us a clock, which meant that everybody should be feeling a lot more urgency in making the restaurant work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel that urgency any more than what I feel in any other season.
Yeah, I think that's what I would say, is that, like, I could see all of these little things, except for Sid's, because it was like, you might just leave. But, like, Tina and everybody's going through, like, I got to get this figured out. I could see that working toward the greater goal of, we have to make this work before the clock runs out. But every season feels like that without the clock, because Oliver Platt is always like, yo, I'm gonna shut you down if y'all don't start making money, because I'm spending money, y'all buying super soakers and whatnot. Richie, I'm gonna beat your ass. So, like, the clock, yeah, didn't add too much.
Yeah, like, once when they brought the clock out, I was like, ooh, we're being given a time limit. Like, mm-hmm. we have until the end of the season, mm-hmm. until this thing. Like, you've given us a thing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the stories are great. And I'm just like, but none of these stories feel like we are urgently working towards that clock. Especially when one of those stories doesn't take place in the restaurant at all, which is my favorite episode of the entire series.
Oh, the wedding?
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing episode.
Amazing episode. But it's not working towards that clock.
No. Which I was fine with. I was like, yo, give me
I'm
this.
I'm also fine with.
Let me be happy for a bit.
But
so
if
stressful.
You are going to introduce the clock, everything needs to work towards that clock.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that this is a bad season. I'm just saying that element of it's a great season. That element of it, for me, didn't work. But everything else, I'm like, if you take the clock out of it, whatever. This is still a great story. And I think that's my problem with it, is I'm like, the clock's not necessary.
Right, because you could have just been like, Carmi, if you don't shape up by this day, I'm going to shut you down, which is what he was doing already. So it's like, I will say this, that final shot of the clock countdown. I was like, hell yeah, that's how you do a finale.
and that's what I mean by I love the clock as a visual element.
Yeah, it works very well.
It's a great visual element.
Stylistically.
The clock, for me, I can't get too into it, but I think the last visual of the clock would have worked for me had they not had the conversation they had right before that shot.
But that's what I mean. That clock doesn't mean anything when we're having that conversation right now.
Right. Like, yeah.
We're talking about, they are in that room talking about the continuation of this restaurant. Mm-hmm. Whereas mm-hmm. the clock is like, no, once this it's clock over. Hits zero, the restaurant's done. Which means,
unless it isn't, so, that's the thing. And we don't know for sure. Like, that was, I think, confusing for me, was that obviously as through the season, we're charting the progress and like, are they getting better? Are they getting better? Are they getting better? And slowly but surely they are. And by the end, we don't really know what's going to happen when the time runs out. We don't know if they're dead. We don't know if, you know, because on the one hand, you've got, ooh, I don't know. But then on the other hand, you got this dude who came out of nowhere, like open two more locations, like nigga.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, Cassie, when you said that you thought that this would make a good series finale, I was like, no, it doesn't, because I don't know the answer to any of these questions, because that didn't matter.
Okay. I'm okay with not knowing the answer, because I think that the main story of the show is kind of over at this point. So
I don't agree.
That's how it kind of was set up. I don't know if it's actually going to turn out that way.
You talking about Carmen's story?
See,
And like, I get that ultimately you could argue the show is not about him. It's about the bear, the restaurant. But to me, his story seems like it's come to a close. I'm like, if I don't really, like, on the one hand, get him out of here, I'm actually okay with it because he kind of sucks. But I don't know. So much of this has been around him that I don't know. It's weird. I don't know.
But the show isn't all about him. That's my thing, though. It's like, it's about all of these people. And if you don't give everybody their closeout, then that's not a good series finale, which is why I'm like, this can't be this. Like, even if you ended on the question of, we don't know whether or not this restaurant is going to continue, fine. That's an ending that you can have. But everybody else's storylines aren't closed out, which is why I was like, this wouldn't make a good series finale. It makes a good season finale because it leaves us something to bite onto next season. We can continue next season to know how these characters are going to continue.
I think my question would be, what does closed out mean? Because if you do end on that question, we don't know if the restaurant's going to survive or not. I mean, what does closed out mean? Does that mean that Marcus has had a conversation with his dad that he's been avoiding forever for some reason? Like, that wouldn't mean their relationship was magically fixed and everything was fine, or that it was ruined. It would keep going. So I guess I'm wondering what you mean by closed out. How do you close it out if they're not dead, right?
It means that all the threads that we opened up in the beginning of this show are closed. And I don't think those are closed. I think we have built towards those things, but I don't think we've made an active effort to end, like, their overall character arcs. Like, you can't tell me this season of The Bear was like the ending of Tina's overall story as a character.
I don't know what Tina's overall story as a character is anymore, because she was focused on one thing this entire season and wasn't in it enough. I'm a little mad about
that. That's fair. But that's fair.
Because also, did that resolve? Did we see what the time was at the end?
Yes. Yes, we did. She got down to like 257.
Cool. Maybe I just missed that. But I figured she would, given that setup for that scene. But I'm like, y'all, you've been playing this out all season.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like, this can't be a final season. We need another season to at least close it out, if that's their plan. If they plan to do more, fine. But like, if season 5 is their planned ending for the show, then they need that season to actually like give everybody their proper ending. I really enjoyed all these episodes. I think episode 7 and episode 4 are my favorites just in general the show. I loved the episode that Io and Lionel wrote. Directed by Janiska Bravo, who did Zola, which is a movie I adore.
Oh, nice.
I loved the new fac appearance that appeared in episode 7.
That I feel like coming. I was not a huge fan of that, only because it felt like we'd been building up to, they've had this where Sugar won't even talk about her, and now here she is, and in one episode it's solved. And I kind of wish there had been more to it when she showed up. That episode in particular didn't hit for me the way I wanted it to, because it was a family episode, and I've been primed to think that those are always going to be super high tension. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm waiting for an explosion, and it never came. And while I can appreciate that for what it is, it wasn't what I wanted, I guess.
I think that's why I loved it, because it wasn't the high tension family episode that we're so used to. It finally felt like, hey, the family's starting to get it together, because we're four seasons in and they shouldn't be the same family that we had in season one and season two. They're finally starting to understand each other. And Carmi, finally starting to heal as a person, is also starting to not give in to what the tension could be. Everybody's starting to understand everybody else. So we can prevent these things from happening and actually do health. We can behave like healthy human beings. And that was really nice, because it felt like, oh, we're growing. And not only that, but this is a wedding. Please do not ruin this girl's wedding when she thinks of you guys all as family. That's really like, don't do that. And it, the bear easily can do that, and it would still be an entertaining episode. But I think I really enjoyed how much this episode shows that these characters have all grown and they're all becoming better people.
I agree.
That table scene is the best.
How, I got it. How big? Because I know in earlier shots it's not that big. Because you see Richie like half hanging out, like under the table, with half of his body hanging out because he can't fit under there. And then all of a sudden it's like, yo, the entire family's under here. Like, what did y'all do?
It is one of my favorite gags of the show too, though, because I for sure was also like, how big is this table? How many more people are going to fit under here?
Are y'all pushing tables together to get under there? That had to be the case.
It was great. It was so good. But yeah, I enjoyed this season a lot. Like, I know we spent a lot of time talking about that clock.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed this season a lot.
Ironically, I was looking at our clock and I was just like, we spent a lot of time talking about this clock.
Listen, I'm just going to say, if Io doesn't get an Emmy, has she already gotten one for this series? Because she hasn't. They're tripping.
That's a good question.
I think she has.
Okay, good. I think she needs another one. Because the stuff, like especially the stuff with her dad.
This is the season I think really, really should get it for.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's an Emmy winner. Outstanding supporting actress in a comedy series.
Comedy series.
Yes. The scene of her talking to Claire about like
idea
of losing her dad, I was like, don't make me cry in these streets, because that's actually how I felt about my mom when she passed, and this is a lot.
Honestly,
that got me good.
That line hit in a way that I was like, oh wait, no, yeah, that's exactly right. And I was just like, not expecting it, because once we find out, like, okay. Spoiler alert, dude's not dead right now. Like, okay, cool. But I didn't expect her to be like, yeah, because after my mom, I was like, oh no, she's me.
I was wondering exactly how you two were doing, because I was thinking about it from a different family member, but like, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, hey man, I expect this from Shrieking. Don't do this on here.
Exactly. I was like, Shrieking is where I go for my passed away mother trauma, not the bear.
The bear is where I go to for my anxiety. Keep up.
Make pasta and yell at each other, please. That's what we're here for.
And make more jokes, please.
Yeah, if you're going to be a comedy, act like
if you're going to be a comedy, are they?
They're not.
There were a few episodes in there, though, where I was like, oh, the jokes are hitting, boy.
Yeah, when they do comedy, it works very well. Like, if this show did comedy as much as a comedy should, I could see it being nominated for Outstanding Comedy Series. Y'all just don't do it enough to be a comedy series.
Yeah.
Great show, though. I will probably be talking about it at the end of the year, hopefully, so I can say more about stuff that's not the clock. But there's a lot of shows, so we'll find out.
Yeah, the cast is great. It always looks great. I was so happy to see Will Poulter back for, like, more episodes
than usual. Yeah, that was lovely.
Yeah, also, it's just a great show.
That little subplot of Chester being super flustered, I loved it. Just like, oh my god, he's so sexy. I don't know what to do. Like, yeah, I know. Been there.
I also love Marcus. Really was like, love...
You're being weird, man. What are you doing?
I also really love our sommelier and his storyline of trying to learn what
was
wines.
So cute.
It's such a small storyline, but it's still like so well done. Like, and I think that speaks like highly of the bear as a show, where you can have like this really, really small character arc that's happening in the background, and it's still really like satisfying and enjoyable.
Yeah.
100%.
We just need stuff like that, not the clock.
That's the bear. We all like it. It's very good.
Next time, mark it that it's coming out, because, dear God, I was not even aware that it was coming.
Right?
Yeah, and they put them all out in the same time. Right? Bear's out. Bye.
Okay. This is how TV shows die. What right? are you doing?
Come on, FX on Hulu. Get it together. All right. Those are the reviews. Cassie, let's do a quick 10-minute take.
Hi.
On something.
That's wild. That's mine. I'm close. That's wild. Anyway. 10-minute take. Oh, my God. Demi, what are you doing with that timer? I said 15 minutes. I got scared.
I'm sorry. I hit the zero a little too much.
So, 10-minute take time. So, it's worth noting, we're running out of these, so... Y'all got suggestions?
It.
Put them in the comments for yes, things I watch 10 minutes of and then never come back to. All right. So this
I feel
time,
like we should do like 10 pages takes where we just have Cassie read the first 10 pages of a novel.
Oh my God. I would be so fucking down. Let's go. This time I watched the first 10 minutes, which again was half an episode for what this was, of I Am Not Okay With This, a show that I'm pretty sure I did actually watch when it came out.
I think you did.
The first episode. I don't know about all of it.
It was like 5 years ago when it came out, so I wasn't sure. Yeah.
But I didn't remember much about it. Like, I knew the basic setup of, like, there's this girl, she's going to get some weird powers. I don't know where that's going to go. So, you know, I knew that, but I didn't know that much about it. I mean, the first 10 minutes, I'm so glad it starts with that first shot of, like, she is covered in blood, walking down the street, looking shell-shocked. Like, that's great. That's a great opener. That makes me interested to see what's next. Because the rest of it is just, yo, I'm 17. I'm in high school. My life kind of sucks. And right at the end, you get a, ooh, she might have made that guy's nose bleed with magic powers. Ooh, but did she? She doesn't know. Ooh. You know, like.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a really interesting show. Because, like, I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that it's got a ton of narration. She narrates all her thoughts, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I feel like, I mean, she herself is fun. Like, it starts out with her being like, dear diary, fuck this shit. I don't want to do this. Right. The guidance counselor is making me do this. That's whack. Which, yeah, if I were 17 and my parent died and they had me write in a journal about it, I'd be like, I don't see the point of this. I have trouble seeing the point in journaling today, and I'm 32. Like, that was enjoyable. And just the way she described the town of, like, it's won the award for, like, most polluted town, like, several years in a row. Like, all right, well, that's a choice. But just, like, you know, she's walking through school, having school time, hanging out with her best friend who she very obviously has a crush on. Like, hello. Just the way you were looking at that girl.
Sometimes you can just tell.
Oh, I mean, it was instantly, I was like, yeah. Yeah, this is gay. But unfortunately,
they did that with Willow too. Like, the first time Aaron Kellyman looks at Ruby Cruz in that show, it's like, oh, that's what we're doing.
It's the adoration, like the I would worship you in a second. It's that.
You're the greatest thing I've ever seen in this world.
She's like, oh, I realize I've never had a best friend before, bitch. That's, yes, but also you want it to be more than that. Happening. You know you do. But unfortunately, also, her best friend is with somebody. A dish.
Yeah, I don't know if the show states it in the first 10 minutes because I watched it 5 years ago. But Sophia's character is explicitly lesbian in the show.
It doesn't
love
state
that for
it. In the first 10 minutes, it doesn't state it. It's just very obvious to me as subtext.
Right.
But
yeah,
you could very easily,
like,
not pick up on
it.
That if you didn't want to. But yeah, I mean,
sometimes the subtext is just text.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it sounds like in this, it turns out to be. It's just, you know, without that explicit statement, I don't know at what point it becomes text.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's clear that it's building to something. Obviously, she starts with making some guy's nose bleed, and that's not going to be enough to get you covered in blood walking through the streets. So clearly we're doing some sort of carry thing. Maybe.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to be bullying, but, you know, teen with powers and blah, blah, blah. And it's one of those things where I think I would watch more of it, but I know it got canceled. So
just watch it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
you've watched the whole thing already.
I think so. I don't know. But
I
want to
say that you talked about it on this podcast.
Oh my God, I may have done.
No. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. You've had like 300 episodes.
Yeah, who knows?
So many.
Yeah, I don't know. But like at the same time, I could watch it. And what if I really like it? And then I get to the end of 7 episodes and it's like, cool, this has a continuation. And like, yeah, I could pick up what it's based on because I think it's based on like a graphic novel or something. But man, I don't want to get invested in the TV show version and then find out. Well, not find out. I already know that they greenlit a second season and then walk that back. Which is
When that happens.
Foul behavior. Yeah, Netflix.
Although they did have
greenlit a
COVID
second season.
As an excuse for this one.
They did, but I just don't do that to them. Like, if you're gonna cancel
ideally,
it,
no,
cancel it. But yeah.
Yeah. I watched I think a couple episodes of that show 5 years ago. And I was like, I really like Sophia Lillis. That's why I watched it. Sure. But it was very slice of life in that
was
first
she
couple episodes.
Beverly?
Yes, she's Beverly.
Ah, okay.
And I was like, this is too teenage girl slice of life for me so far. Like, I need you to turn into Carrie or do something. But it was just like, I like my friend and she's with a jock. And I was like, all right, well, I don't care. I'm pushing 30. I got time for this. But I was like, Cassie might like this show. So
it went on the list. Yeah. Yeah, it is in that way. It is my shit. I'm here for all of it, mainly because I can tell how desperately you're pining for your best friend. And like, yeah, I've been there. Sucks.
Yeah.
Will you?
It'd be like that sometimes.
It do. Wow. All right. That's it.
Did it.
Crazy.
Yeah. Cassie, watch the rest of the show. It's not going nowhere.
Okay. We'll see. I don't be watching things except for when I do.
Freaking docuseries about cheerleaders and cults.
Wait, that the cheerleader one, actually all of that has been really good, but the cheerleader one was really good. You should watch it.
I might. Anyway, thank you audience for listening to us. Yep, it's what we do. It's what you're here for, probably. I don't know why else you would be here. Thank you, Crown Digital, Brandon, and Aya for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Demi, thank you for editing, putting us on YouTube, going to see Megan 2.0 with me. I'm so glad you liked it.
I had a great time.
And watching The Old Guard 2, because I think I'm waiting for my niece to watch that, because the first one was her favorite movie when she was too young to watch it. That was weird.
I told Joe yesterday that it came out already, and Joe was like, I have to watch it, but I have to wait for Kayla.
It's so funny, because like I'm also waiting for Kayla, and Kayla's kind of waiting for Gabby, and I'm kind of waiting for Gabby. It's a whole thing.
So you guys are probably going to have to do that as a family thing. Have fun.
Yeah. Cassie, thank you for actually watching one of the things we reviewed. I don't know how often that happens. You know, maybe it's never happened. Who knows? Times are weird. Audience, as always, you can reach us in the comments or you can hit us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast or Facebook.com/Creative Differences PC or TikTok at Creative Differences Pod. If you want to talk to me about the Megan franchise, find me on Instagram or Letterboxd at A King Named Simba.
Come talk to me about, I don't know, come talk to me about your favorite TTRPG. I started a Blades in the Dark campaign recently, and it's fun. You can find me on Blue Sky at Sassy Soothsayer.
If you guys want to see me be a lot more articulate about my thoughts on movies, because I'm really bad at it on mic, you guys can find me on... I just ramble when we're on mic, and then I edit it and I go, I could have worded this so much better. You guys can find me. I'm thinking about my Old Guard 2 review right now, and I'm just like, my Letterboxd review for this is so much better. So with that being said, you guys can check me out on Letterboxd at Demi Joie. Joie spelled J-O-I-E. Thanks again for joining us. I know last time we promised you guys a review for The Last of Us, but then Dallas got sick and a bunch of stuff came up. So sorry, guys, that didn't happen. I'm once again promising you guys a review for next week. Tune in this week. We will be putting out a Throwback Thursday reaction for Superman the movie from 1978.
Yeah.
And then after that, we should be doing a review for Superman, the new James Gunn film, and the start of our new DC cinematic universe.
Yeah. And in theory, everyone who is not anti-black will be reviewing Ironheart.
Woo!
So tune in for that. Tune in to find out who's not anti-black. Anyway. You can find Gabby at home calibrating the thigh strength of her Florence Pugh robot. All right, it's been different. Bye.
Bye.
All right, we have a hypothetical situation. The government And, you know, who knows how hypothetical it is, because government is insane and they do stupid things. Mm-hmm. The government has mandated that every household has to have a humanoid robot in it, but you get to choose the likeness of your robot. Who or what will your robot look like? I will start to give you guys time to think of your answers. Mine is going to look like me, and I know that's a terrible idea because I've seen movies, but I can send it to go to work and stuff for me when I want to be at home and be lazy.
That's not, don't do that.
It's a terrible idea, but if I have to have a robot, I'm going to get some days off work.
I want mine to look like Sunny from My Robot, because I don't want my robot to look, I don't want it to look superhuman, because that would scare me. I'm going to be honest with you. That's I feel fair. Like the expected answer that everybody thought I was going to say was like Ivana Sakno in Megan 2.0, but no. The robot overtaking frightens me, and I'm not here for it.
Fair.
I need to know what's a robot and what's not.
Smart.
Well, now I can't give a horny answer.
Do it.
No. I needed
one of you to do it.
No, I. God.
I gave
I don't
a hint
know.
Of one.
Yeah.
That's true. No. She hinted at it.
I mean, who would I? I don't fucking.
Horny answer.
No.
Go.
No.
First thought.
I.
Is it West Chatham?
I don't know. It's got to be someone who looks human, because I have to be able to treat it like a human, because that's how you prevent the uprising. People don't get that.
Fair.
It's not inevitable. Actually, you know what? No, fuck it. Completely different answer. Just make it look like Legion from Mass Effect. I'm so down. I don't know.
What does that look like?
We're about to look it up.
Yeah, we'll
like a robot.
All right, we're going to look that up. Audience, you guys have a good one.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like you're judging me.